It would be nice if all disputes could be resolved, all conflicts reconciled. In the real world, that's not always possible. In some cases, resolution is not an option, and we have to cut all ties with those causing our conflict. Sometimes, we have to shut the door and set the deadbolt. Today, guidance from the life of Jacob on when and where to bar the gate. Stay with us. From the Moody Church in Chicago, this is Running to Win with Dr. Erwin Lutzer, whose clear teaching helps us make it across the finish line. Today, Erwin Lutzer continues his series on When You've Been Wronged. Dr. Lutzer is speaking on Jacob and Esau, two brothers at war, and our focus is on Jacob the cheater.
So here you have Jacob working, he's deceiving Laban, Laban is deceiving Jacob, and on it goes. But after 20 years, Jacob thinks to himself, it is time now for me to turn back and to go and to leave. And so he leaves, and we have a very interesting story. Because Laban begins to pursue Jacob, believing that Jacob had stolen his gods. This is a fascinating story, because in chapter 31, you find that Laban pursues Jacob and says, "Surely you have taken my gods." This is actually in chapter 31, verse 30. That's worth a sermon on its own, isn't it? "You've stolen my gods." Turns out, actually, one of his wives had, but he didn't know it. She had taken the family idol. So you can see idolatry was still a part of their lives at that time. But Laban and Jacob decide to part. They decide to go their separate ways. And they make an agreement. They set boundaries. I want you to notice the text. It says in verse 49 of chapter 31, "The Lord watch between you and me when we are out of one another's sight." I saw that in a den of a Christian one time, hanging on a wall. "The Lord watch between you and me while we are absent one from another." I had to smile because, you know, in context, it doesn't mean that at all. Now, that's a good verse taken out of context. But actually, the context of the verse is this. I don't trust you, you don't trust me, we're going to put up a pillar here, and God help you if you put your pinky over this line, and may God have mercy upon me if I put my pinky over the line. Because you stay in your part of the country, and I'm going to stay in my part of the country, and let's make sure that we don't get involved in our lives again. May God watch over you when I'm not looking at you. That's the context. And so they set up this pillar. Could I say that there are times when we need to put boundaries on other people? Some of you women have to put boundaries in your relationship with men. You have to say, here's where the line is, and God be merciful to you if you step over that line. Because sometimes it's not possible to have reconciliation. Sometimes relationships absolutely need boundaries. Because there are some people who are never going to change, and there are some people, don't take this wrongly, with whom you can never really reconcile. And the reason is because if you try to reconcile, it'll always be on their terms, and always having expectations of manipulation that are all a part of the reconciliation process. So it may be better to simply separate from them. I was in Germany recently, as some of you know, with my wife Rebecca, and I came back a few days earlier than she did, and she stayed there, and she asked me to water the flowers that we have at home. So I watered them. But then I began to think that maybe I missed some. So over the phone I said, you know, I think I may have missed some flowers. She said, well, how many did you water? I said, five. And she said, five? You can't be serious. I said, yeah, I watered five. She said, we only have four. I said, I watered five. She said, did you water that middle one in the den? I said, yes. She said, didn't you realize that that's an artificial flower? No, didn't realize that that was an artificial flower. You know, there are some people with whom you have a relationship and it's like watering wilted silk flowers. You can do it, but it's not very profitable. They're never going to change. They're never going to be any different. I wish I had brought a letter with me. I intended to, but I left it at home, from someone who wrote to me about a mother-in-law who was really evil. Now, I use that word very precisely. Not everybody who's hard to get along with is evil, but she's evil. And the reason that you can distinguish that is because here's a happy marriage that her son has with his wife, and this woman wants to come in between the two of them to create strife. She's always dividing. You've heard me say before that there are some people who get their sense of significance from being able to destroy and to divide and to hurt other people. That's where they draw their sense of significance and power. And after reading the letter that went on two or three pages in great detail, they did what I thought was a good thing to do. They moved out of state and they moved somewhere else. One woman said, you know, my mother wants to control me so much, she is the Midwest distributor of guilt. Always making me feel guilty. Always telling me that I've not done enough for her. Always being impossible in those relationships. Sometimes you have to just draw boundaries and say, look, here's where the boundary is, and may the Lord watch between you and me, and let's be absent from one another. That's what Jacob and Laban did. Now, don't use that as an excuse, because these people that are difficult to get along with, remember, as I told you earlier, there are some who are listening to me who fit into that category. And what are they doing? They're thinking that I'm talking about somebody else and not them. That's number one. But number two, you do have to forgive them, as we're going to explain in this series. You have to forgive them, even though reconciliation may not be possible, or maybe only partial reconciliation is possible. There are people like that, but don't ever use it as an excuse. Now, what happens is Jacob, though, is on his way back, and he is going to encounter Esau. And this comes to us now in chapter 32 of Genesis. And this is the place where Jacob is so full of fear. He's full of fear, and the reason is he knows that Esau might be willing to kill him and to even the score. So it says in chapter 32, Jacob went on his way, and the angels of God met him. And when Jacob saw them, he said, this is God's camp. So he called the name of that place Mahanaim, which means the angels of God or God's camp. Jacob is wondering what to do, and I think that he outlines for us a means by which we can be reconciled, steps that will help us in reconciliation. First of all, Jacob, to his everlasting credit, actually sends his brother a gesture of goodwill. We can't read the whole text, but Jacob asks that his messengers go on ahead and talk to Esau. They come back and they say, Esau is there with 400 men and he's on his way. Jacob becomes even more terrified. So he sends him a bunch of animals as a present. You can add them up in this chapter, beginning at verse 13, about 550 different animals he sends to Esau on ahead as a gesture of goodwill. There's something about doing something nice for someone that you have wronged that begins to soften their heart. And maybe what that gesture does is it says to them, you know, I know that I've messed up. I know that I'm the one who has done wrong. And I'm trying to do you some good because I want your heart to be turned toward me. That's the first thing that Jacob does. Now also he sends ahead his wives and so forth. He's showing trust. Secondly, he meets God. He begins to pray. Chapter 32, verse 11, please deliver me from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esau, for I fear him that he may come and attack me, the mothers with the children. And he begins to plead with God and pray as he has never prayed before, that his brother's heart would be turned toward him. In fact, he begins to pray so much that God eventually actually gives him an experience that has often been written about and meditated upon, and that is that a man begins to wrestle with Jacob when he is left alone at the brook of Jabbok. You'll notice it says in verse 24, Jacob was left alone, and a man wrestled with him until the breaking of the day. When the wrestling match began, Jacob in the night did not know who he was fighting with. Turns out that this actually was God. It was a pre-incarnate manifestation of Jesus Christ that we've noticed elsewhere in the Old Testament. And he doesn't know who is fighting with him until his assailant touches his hip socket, and Jacob's hip was put out of joint as he wrestled with him, verse 25. And then he begins to realize that he's in the presence of deity. Somehow that touch was so powerful, it was so debilitating, it was so humiliating that Jacob knew, I'm in the presence of someone greater than just a man. So Jacob asks him, what is your name? And he said, why do you ask my name? You'll notice he says, then he said, let me go, for the day has broken. That's the assailant. But Jacob said, I will not let you go unless you bless me. And he said to him, what is your name? And he said, Jacob. In saying his name, Jacob was confessing, cheater, heel grabber, deceptive. And he said, your name shall no longer be called Jacob, but Israel, for you have striven with God and with men, and you have prevailed. The name Israel, a striver with God. Some people have interpreted it, Prince of God. This is Pastor Lutzer. I think that there should be some encouragement in this message, because Jacob was indeed a man with many flaws. He was dishonest. And God does not overlook dishonesty. And yet at the same time, we have to commend him for wanting so desperately to come back home and to make peace with his estranged brother Esau. And he was willing to make that peace, even though there was a tremendous amount of risk involved. We also have to commend him because he wanted the blessing. Do not let me go until you bless me. Those are wonderful words, aren't they? And sometimes when we are in God's presence, we have to take that kind of an attitude. Lord, I will wait before you, and I will be here, and I will not let you go until you give me a blessing. And I think that when God touched the socket of Jacob's thigh and made him limp, of course, the whole point was to make sure that he would be so weakened that there is no way that he would be able to actually fight Esau. God was illustrating another principle, that when God wants to mightily use us, God sometimes has to weaken us. Because just as the Apostle Paul said, when I am weak, not 2 weeks later, but when I am weak, then am I strong.
Dr. Erwin Lutzer has brought us part two of Brothers at War, the third of 8 messages in his series on When You've Been Wronged. Tomorrow, join us as Jacob and Esau are finally reconciled. Running to Win comes to you from the Moody Church in Chicago. Our current series can be yours in book form as our thank you when you give a gift of any amount to support Running to Win. Just call us at 1-800-215-5001. That's 1-800-215-5001. Ask about When You've Been Wronged. Online, go to offerrtw.com. That's offerrtw, all one word, .com. Or write to Running to Win at Box 11174, Chicago, Illinois, 60611. This is Dave McAllister. Join us tomorrow for our next edition of Running to Win.